Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Takeout ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
But who's counting, right?
His name is Major.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen,
please welcome Major Garrett
from the nation's capital.
Major, fantastic.
It's The Takeout.
This is a major achievement.
With CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major Garrett.
Yes, CBS. Yes, hi.
Major Garrett.
Major, that's nonsense, and you should know better.
Is Major out of the doghouse?
The answer is yes.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. Ro Khanna is our guest this week. Been on the program before May 2020, for those of you who are deeply versed in Takeout podcast archives. Ro is an interesting character here in Washington. Progressive, Biden supporter, co-chair for Bernie Sanders back in 2020. Talks about progressive capitalism, and right now is in the midst of a kind of a low-level dispute with Nicole Shanahan, who is the running mate chosen by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So let's start there. Ro, first of all, great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me back.
So what is your relationship currently with Nicole Shanahan? Someone you knew previously and you know now, and she says you are anti-democratic by telling her to get off RFK Jr.'s ticket.
Well, Nicole was an acquaintance slash political friend. We would get together for coffee, drinks once or twice a year. She's a passionate advocate on climate, passionate advocate on regenerative agriculture, had supported my work there, had supported other causes that we both cared about. And before she was selected as vice president, she has the courtesy of giving me a phone call. And I was kind of blown away. I mean, about a week before I had heard buzz, I didn't really think it was real. She said, no, this is real. And I made a polite case. I said, Nicole, you have the right to run, but look at all the causes you care about. Climate, abortion rights, support the president, help us reform the party from the inside. And she said, well, no, I'm gonna run. I sent her a text after that saying, look, you have the right to run, but I hope you'll join the president. And then sent her an open letter. And so I don't think it's anti-democratic to make the case that she should support Biden. I mean, I'm not saying she doesn't have the right to run.
Should she get off the ticket?
She should be, yes, she should support President Biden. I mean, unless she wants to stay on the ticket and campaign for Biden, I guess that's another another way she could do it.
Dimension not yet thought of.
But, yeah, no, I think she should reconsider and support the president. And this does not mean, but... Do I think we should make it harder for them to get access to ballots? No. Do I think the place should be rigged in any way so you can't have third parties? No. I'm just talking about her personal decision. And my view is the stakes are too high and that she should support the president.
What do you believe the net effect of her RFK Jr. candidacy is in the 2024 campaign?
Not good. I mean,
from your perspective. Be more specific. What do you mean not good?
Well, not good in reelecting the president. I mean, I don't sugarcoat things. I mean, the reality is that Donald Trump, we were talking about this before the show, has never gotten to 51%. You know, there's a ceiling for him. I don't know whether that ceiling is 45, 46, 47. But the more candidates you have that make it possible for Donald Trump to win with less than 50%, the better the chances for Trump. So can Biden win with Robert Kennedy on the ballot? Sure, but it makes it harder.
Why does it make it harder? What is, from your vantage point, Ro Khanna, the RFK Jr. appeal to progressives?
Well, I think it makes it harder for anyone who has a real, real problem with both Biden and Trump, who may say, look, I don't love Biden, but I'm not voting Donald Trump, and I'm going to vote for Joe Biden. And now you got another candidate, Robert Kennedy. He's got the Kennedy name. That still matters. And some of those voters may say, all right, I'll just vote for this Robert Kennedy guy. And I think there are more of those voters who would have voted for Biden than would have voted for Trump. Now, if you look at Kennedy on Israel policy, he's way, way to the right of Biden. But most voters are not as informed. And so those people who have a problem, young voters, others, with Biden's policy on Gaza, they may also
we'll get to
say,
that.
Yeah, they may just say, oh, I'm going to pull the lever for Kennedy.
Should the president's reelection campaign be more aggressive going after and knocking down RFK Jr.?
I don't think that would work. I don't think the personal insults at him, I think that could backfire. But what I would do is be more aggressive in talking to young voters, to independent voters, to making the case that we have a future-oriented vision, an inspiring vision, and talking about the complex issues directly. You know, I had an agenda from the Biden campaign. It was meet and greet with students, meet and greet with students, meet and greet with students. I said, Major's not going to cover that. Well, let's throw some, what about talking to students about Israel-Palestine? What about talking to students about student loans? What about talking to students about what they don't like or like about the climate? We can't have a vanilla campaign. We got to have some fireworks. We got to be honest about the issues and then give a sense of where we're going in the future to capture people's excitement.
Where is the Biden reelection campaign on the vanilla scale currently?
This is why you did Sunday TV and all the things. Look, I think they've got to, the president's got to bring out more of his State of the Union. That was a nine in terms of passion. And that's the Biden we need, someone who's jousting with Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think the president would be fine. I mean, I know they may not like that. Going to a town hall, do what I did. I went to UNLV. I had a town hall on the Middle East. And the reason I'm dwelling on this is because you look at voters under 35. That's on their TikTok feeds. That's on their Instagram feeds. We invited everyone from the Palestinian groups to the Jewish groups, everyone from Hillel to the Chabad House to Justice for Palestine groups. And it was a civil conversation. Mm-hmm. The people were civil, thoughtful, interesting. And I think the president should engage in that, should engage in, okay, student loans. Let's have a town hall on student loans. Mm-hmm. People say, oh, he's going to make a gaffe. How many gaffes has Donald Trump made? I mean, he makes gaffes all the time. Joe Biden's made gaffes all the time. It hasn't hurt him. He became president. So my view is he obviously knows how to do something. You got to get him senator, vice president, president. You know, put him out there. Let people mix it up.
Is the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. campaign, from your perspective, coherent?
Let me give him where I think there is some appeal and then where I don't understand what's going on. Maybe I'll start with I don't understand what's going on. I don't understand where he comes close to making a sympathetic case for the people who in January 6th, knocked down.
Call them activists.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get that. I mean,
then they withdrew it or tried to withdraw it.
Especially given his family's history. I don't get that, how he can even come close to someone, to people who are engaged in violence.
That strikes you as incoherent.
It takes me as incoherent and not consistent with his legacy or who he is at his best. Like, I don't know. I don't get that part of him. I don't fully understand the vaccine part. I don't understand it. The place where I think he does have some connection is when he says our Pentagon budget is too bloated. We've been in too many overseas wars. We've got corporations that have not given Americans a fair shot. There are forces that have led to the working and middle class not having a fair fight. And that messaging, populism, has some appeal. And that, but I think it is melded with an incoherence that that does him a disservice.
Are you similarly concerned about Cornel West's third-party candidacy?
I know Cornel. We know each other from the Bernie campaign. Cornel is one of the most brilliant intellectuals, but that's different than running for president. I'm not sure Cornell's going to get on the ballots. He's out there. He wants to speak about economic justice, racial justice, human rights, that more power to him. I think he can make his point without hurting the president. And at the end of the day, I'm not sure he's going to get on the ballots to hurt.
Speaking of ballots, do you fear that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and No Labels could come together and he could find ballot access otherwise unavailable?
I do think there's a possibility of that. I think that would really hurt, though, even the economic populist appeal that I said, right? If Kennedy's whole...
Because No Labels is not necessarily a hotbed of economic populism.
No, and you listen to Kennedy's announcement speech, which I listened to, and the parts where he's talking about the military-industrial complex and defense contractors making too much and not being in overseas wars and corporations making too much profits.
Listing the No Labels donors.
Yeah. So then you get a look, No Labels donors to fund you, and there's a bunch of hypocrisy. So I would say that would hurt his message, and I think it would come at a huge cost because right now he has at least a quirky outsider perspective.
That's the voice of Ro Khanna, our special guest. Segment 2 of The Takeout coming your way in just 1 second.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to The Takeout. You know, one of the hallmarks of this show is restaurants. We love to go to restaurants. Why? Well, yes, I like to eat. That's definitely a given. But as you know, it's a fundamental truth of this show. All conversations are better over a meal. That's just a fact. You know it and I know it. Ro Khanna is here. We're at Carmine's. We want to thank them for their hospitality. And you know, we always pay for our food. When I say hospitality, I just mean putting up with us. We pay for everything. My dinner's on its way. So Ro, I want to talk to you. You mentioned about Gaza, Israel. This is an enormous issue for the globe. It's an enormous issue for the future of Israel. It's a very pressing issue as a matter of policy and politics for the White House. Are you currently satisfied with President Biden's approach and emphasis on civilian populations achieving some sort of protection in this conflict with Israel?
I believe the president has come a lot closer to where I and some progressive Democrats are than us coming closer to where he is. So he's moving in the right direction.
Did the tragedy of the World Central Kitchen force him in that direction?
I think he's been inching in that direction, but that, I think, was a
galvanizing event.
A key moment. And it was the first time that he clearly stood up to Netanyahu publicly. And Netanyahu relented. I mean, Netanyahu then let in aid. So in part, then people say, well, okay, if you can... Your whole argument has been, well, Netanyahu's doing his own thing. I don't... What influence do I have? But the first time you told him that you wanted something done... He relented. And
it was the first time the president said, if you don't do something, our policy will change.
Yes. Look, Ronald Reagan, when Menachem Begin was prime minister of Israel, and Israel was going on too far in Lebanon, called up Menachem Begin and said, you will stop and Menachem Begin stopped within a few hours, and Reagan later said, I never realized how powerful the American presidency was until that moment. And I believe that the president has enormous power with Netanyahu. He did the right thing by standing with Israel in the beginning after the heinous October 7th attacks. Those should be condemned unequivocally. There should be no dispute that Hamas is a terrorist organization, that Hamas engaged in sexual violence of the worst kinds. After a month and a half where Hamas, his battalions were destroyed, this war should have come to an end with a release of hostages and a permanent ceasefire. The president then should have started calling for that. And at this point, we should not be transferring offensive weapons to Israel.
We should not.
We should not. 56 members of Congress, either including Speaker Pelosi, wrote a letter to the president, including me, saying that I am all for still providing Iron Dome. I'm all for still providing...
Iron Dome is a method by which Israel can defend itself against missile attacks.
Against missile attacks. I'm all for providing Arrow 3. Those were the types of interceptors that... worked, fortunately, in the Iranian attack recently at Israel. And I'm glad that the president sent our military to help intercept some of those.
Ooh, our thanks to Destiny. Some garlic bread has arrived. Destiny, we thank you. Thank you.
And I appreciate that our military helped stop a lot of those missiles. So, unfortunately, only one seven-year-old girl has been hurt and in critical condition. I'm all for helping with the defense, but not with the offense. At this point, we need a permanent ceasefire and release of hostages.
A guest on this show recently, Samantha Power, said that famine has begun in Gaza. Is Israel the cause of that famine?
Israel has not done enough to prevent the famine. I mean, obviously, you start with the fact that Hamas should never have attacked. I mean, that's the first problem. And I agree that Hamas is not always getting the aid into its people. You say you can't have a view that it's all Israel's fault. But Israel has insisted on blaming all of UNRWA, and there are...
The UN Relief Agency.
UN Relief Agency. That's the only agency that has the distributional mechanism there. So even if you have a few people affiliated with Hamas, and I'm not saying that's not true, there are 12,000 aid workers, but we can't just be defunding it. Israel restricted too much the land corridors to allow aid in from... Gaza, forcing us to do things like construct a seaport, which is delaying the process. Finally, they're relenting and allowing aid in. But the most obstructive thing is that they're bombing. I mean, they're bombing the area, and so it's hard to get aid in when you're competing with bombs.
Do you believe, Ro Khanna, at any level, Israel has committed war crimes?
I will leave that to the courts. I mean, there's a case with the International Court of Justice, and I'll leave that to the State Department to look at the facts. And I don't think it's for me to sit here and make a legal determination. What I will say is that Netanyahu is engaged in bombing that has been indiscriminate, that they has hit hospitals and refugee camps and has not exercised sufficient care for Palestinian lives.
Let me rephrase it. Has the credibility of that charge ever been this close when it comes to the state of Israel?
I don't think that there's ever even been a case against Israel. So by definition, Netanyahu has come closest to the line of having people criticize Israel not paying sufficient attention to Palestinian civilian women and children and lives. And whenever you say
Shatila and Shawbrook would have been very close in the history of Israel.
Fair enough.
Tom Friedman would argue that would have been a case where war crimes accusations could have been leveled.
That's fair enough. I mean, I leave that to Tom Friedman. But in modern times, and I think that Netanyahu has come, shown an indifference that has not made Israel look well in the global community. And
do you believe Netanyahu is missing something about what's happening to Israel's reputation in this moment globally?
He's either missing it or he doesn't care. But I would just say to the prime minister, come talk to voters under 40 in America. You know, do you understand? I mean, just is someone briefing you on TikTok and Instagram and the feeds? I mean, you're losing young Jewish voters. You're usually losing young Jewish Americans. I heard... secondhand a story, but I think it's true, and I don't mind repeating it with the caveat that it's secondhand. Our ambassador to Israel came back, and he was telling a friend of his, Tom Nines, he said, you know, and he, with some curse words, my daughter, I'd have no problem that she's to my left, but does she have to be at a Free Palestine rally in New York? This is our ambassador to Israel, right? I mean, you know, they're losing a new generation. And then they come back, the answer from the Israeli government, who I've talked to is, Ro, but Hamas is doing this. Hamas is hiding civilians. Hamas is doing this. Anytime you criticize Israel, I said, Israel is not Hamas. Hamas is a terrorist organization. Israel is a Western democracy. The standards are higher. So one can criticize Netanyahu's approach without drawing a moral equivalence with Hamas.
Right. Let me ask you this. When you talk to progressives, especially those under the age of 40 or 35, there is a language about Israel I want you to talk about. There is a language that they're colonizers, that they're exploiters, that they don't belong there, that they are somehow illegitimate in that place and in this time. What do you tell them? Or how do you reframe or engage in that dialogue?
I reject that characterization.
I'm not mischaracterizing it, am I?
Certainly among some. But among some of the college campuses,
yes.
And among some of the protesters, that language is used. And as progressive Democrats, we should acknowledge that there is an anti-Semitism that is prevalent in the United States. And I think denial of Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state is a form of anti-Semitism. And that's why I did an anti-Semitism resolution, actually, with Brian Fitzpatrick. There's complexity to the story, right? I mean, Israel traces its roots back after the Canaanites. I mean, I guess you could say Canaanites had the first claim to the land, but they have a claim that goes back thousands of years to Abraham and to David. The Palestinians trace their heritage back thousands of years. As an Indian American, I'm tempted to do what my grandfather would say, it's all the British's fault, but the reality is that the British didn't help the situation.
No, they did not.
And so, but the situation is complex. Yes. And if we want to have peace, we have to understand that there are complex narratives, and it's not as simple as saying one side is a colonizer and the other side is not. That's different than saying one side is engaged in the occupation in the West Bank and Gaza, and the occupation needs to end.
That's the voice of Ro Khanna. Carmine's is our host restaurant. We have some delectable food here. Segment 3 of The Takeout coming your way in just one moment. Welcome back to The Takeout. Ro Khanna is our guest. We were talking a few moments ago, Congressman, about the Biden economic message. In an article that appeared recently in The Atlantic, you were quoted as saying, We haven't been driving a clear message. We have to have a better message on the economy, and we have to have a better message on immigration. Do you still believe that?
I do. I would say two things on the economic message. One, we have to understand people's pain and anger and frustration on two accounts. One, on an immediate basis. Rents are still high. The cost of food is still high. The cost of gas is still high. So we need to make an argument that we're going to do more to lower costs and increase pay than Donald Trump, not that somehow we have triumphed and because unemployment is low and inflation is 3.5%, things are great. But on a more deeper level, we have to understand that a lot of people were upset at the institutions because the institutions of this country have let people down, hollowed out industry, hollowed out the working and middle class, sent jobs offshore, cheap wages, and people's identity was lost. And that happened over 40 years while politicians watched, while Wall Street watched. I think it's what created the conditions for Donald Trump's rise. And so to go to these communities and say, we understand that you were shafted. We understand you don't see yourself in modernity in terms of the economy. We understand why your parents' life may have been better. And here's our vision for what we want to do. And by the way, we're not going to finish the job in 8 years. This is a 20-year project to rebuild places like Johnstown, Pennsylvania. So, in my view, we need a more empathetic economic message that recognizes the legitimate grievances of voters.
Do you believe in this inflationary environment that corporations are gouging consumers?
I think that they're benefiting
from it. Because there's a delta, ladies and gentlemen. Check the economic data on this. wholesale prices and inflation prices. There's a big gap in between them. And one of the ways that economists explain that is profit-taking on the part of the sellers, meaning the corporations.
Yeah.
Do you believe that to be true?
I do. I mean, look.
Should the president say more about that?
Yes. I mean, look, and I think you should say it simply in Joe Biden language. Have you ever noticed that the price of at the pump goes up really fast, but it doesn't come down that fast? Have you ever noticed your rent goes up really fast, doesn't come down that fast? And there is that delta, which corporations used inflation to jack up the prices. They haven't brought it down. And that's the profit margin that has led to record corporate profits. And there needs to be pressure on them to bring it down. This is why I have been for a rent cap. Now, in traditional economics, this is heresy.
Yes.
Milton Friedman made his career, his first paper, I know, because I went to University of Chicago, was against rent caps. The reality of the modern economic research, in New Jersey, they did studies which have rent caps. It does not hurt supply because you have an artificial shortage. Friedman's papers make the assumption that there can't be an artificial shortage. And right now you've got the landlords getting all the benefit of that and not the renters. And we need to balance that out. But we need policies like that are actually going to make a difference on people in the street who are saying, well, what is happening with my rent?
You also said in The Atlantic, I mentioned it, we, meaning the Democratic Party, and I believe the royal we there is President Biden, needs a better immigration message. What's wrong with it?
First, we need to be aspirational about being an immigrant nation. You know, Mario Cuomo's 1984 speech, after that he was asked about his parents, and he said, I imagine what it was like for my parents to come to Ellis Island. And I imagine my mother being asked, what is your education level? Eighth grade. What does your husband do? He's a ditch digger. Why are you in America? Oh, just because of economic opportunity. What's your hope for your son? Nothing much, just that he becomes governor of New York. You know, and Cuomo tells it with much more flourish. But that's the story of America. Right. And you got one side which is saying immigrants are poisoning the bloodstream of America, and the other side that's saying, how do we address all of the problems that immigrants are posing? And no one is saying, this is our comparative advantage. This is why we're beating China. This is why it's a good thing that there's a line of people who still want to come to the United States of America, don't want to go to communist China, don't want to go to a stagnant Europe. This is what renews the American spirit. And then you say, now that we understand why we're one of the greatest nations in the world, the greatest nation in the world, and immigrants are part of that, let's make sure that we have an orderly process. Let's make sure we have a secure border. Let's make sure we have a pathway to citizenship. But we're not arguing the affirmative at all.
And yet, when President Trump, former President Trump, or his supporters hear you, they would say, well, that's just Ro Khanna dressing up an open borders policy.
I'm not for open borders. I mean, my parents came here as immigrants. They got a green card. They became citizens. I'm all for people following the process. But first, let's acknowledge that immigrants enrich the United States. Then let's have a secure border and actually solve the problem, which this president has tried to do from day one, which is more border agents, more immigration judges, more processing of people before they get to the border, and not having draconian policies such as punishing sanctions in Venezuela that started under Trump, that we were supposed to get rid of Maduro. We still have Maduro, but we've got a whole group of Venezuelans who are fleeing because of the economic conditions caused by some of our sanctions. It's a less destabilizing policy in Latin America. And then working with AMLO and others in Mexico to figure out how we solve the policies with Latin America and Mexico. But the Republicans want the issue. They don't want the solutions on this.
But you're not in favor of the bill that was passed or proposed in the Senate that the president endorsed that had none of the progressive approaches to immigration and had all of the restrictive Republican approaches.
You know what the tragedy is? I never had to even cast a hard vote. They didn't put me on the record. I would have been a very tough vote for me because I was opposed to the process. The Latino senators were not involved in that. None of the Hispanic caucus was involved. There was a massive language that would have taken away people's right to immigrate as in asylum, and I was probably a no. But if the president had called me and said, "Ro, we really need this. This is the only compromise," it would have been a tough vote. I would have considered the progressives. I considered the tragedy of that is even though the progressives got nothing, even though the president basically gave the Republicans carte blanche to write that bill, even though the Latino caucus, the Hispanic caucus had no say, Donald Trump still opposed it. And the sad part is he's paying no political price for it because he's still 20 points up on immigration. I mean, it's just a sad part, and that's why he did it. It's politics.
When Donald Trump talks about, as he frequently does, concentration camps and mass deportations in this country, what comes to your mind?
Ignorance.
Does that make you fearful?
It makes me fearful for people who are undocumented in this country. It makes me fearful for people who are immigrants. I have enough faith still. I mean, maybe this is the optimism in me, my Bucks County roots, that I think this country is strong and our institutions are strong and our character is strong, that we would successfully resist the president if Trump somehow won again. His ability to do that, including the courts, which I have criticized and have disappointed me, but they did uphold the election in 2020. But what first comes to my mind is how sad that someone running for the American presidency is using that kind of language in the United States of America for political gain and for his own appealing to the worst instincts of his base.
In June of this year, will Mike Johnson still be the Speaker of the House?
I think so. I know Mike. We came in together. I think on Ukraine, he wants to do the right thing. We have ideological differences, but I think he's not one of these, let's just blow the place up.
Will he still be Speaker because Democrats worked to protect him and preserve his speakership?
I said if he brings a clean Ukraine bill, I would look to table a motion to vacate him. But at some point, I think the Republicans also will say, do we really want to change horses a few months before the election? And, I think he hangs on at least till November.
Do you think there will be a clean Ukraine bill soon?
I think Johnson wants to get there. He would have Democratic support. He'd have people like me if he puts up a clean Ukraine bill, helping him not get vacated. I'm hopeful we'll have some movement on it.
That's the voice of Ro Khanna. More food has arrived. We'll continue the conversation and enjoy the food when we come back. Segment 4 of the Takeout coming your way in just 1 second.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to The Takeout, continuing our conversation with Ro Khanna. So, Congressman, you mentioned him before we went to break, if the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, brings a clean Ukraine bill. Well, what if he brings the Senate-passed bill that has aid to Israel, Ukraine, Asia-Pacific, and in that aid to Israel is offensive weapons? What about that?
Well, I have a challenge with that. We can't amend it.
You just got to take it, up or down.
We'll cross that bridge when it happens. But as of now, I have a very hard time voting for any offensive aid to Israel, as should 56 House Democrats, including Speaker Pelosi, who signed that letter to President Biden just 3-4 days ago. Now, could the White House give some assurance that they're not going to, maybe the president comes out and says, look, vote for this, but we're not going to ship any offensive weapons, and maybe that gets people to be comfortable, but it would require some action like that from the White House.
What is your attitude about something Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, has talked about, which is a loan to Ukraine as opposed to aid?
Better than nothing. I mean, if that's the only thing we can get, let's move in that direction. I mean, I think from my understanding of talking to the people at the State Department, at the NSC, we need the aid. The loans aren't going to be enough, but we can't. Every day that goes by is a day that is
something is better than nothing.
Yes,
understood. Real quick, I'm going to mention some states, and I want you to tell me if President Biden is going to win them or not.
I'm going to say he wins everything.
All right. Pennsylvania.
He wins. He definitely wins Pennsylvania. I'll tell you why.
More comfortably than in 2020?
More comfortably, or at least he wins it. I grew up in Pennsylvania. When I was in 11th or 12th grade, I played Joe Biden in mock Congress when he was the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Joe Biden's roots in Pennsylvania go very deep. And he was known when I was growing up as the third senator of Pennsylvania. He wins it just out of his tradition and roots in the state.
Michigan.
I think that's his hardest state. That, to me, is the swing state. If the election were tomorrow, it's a true toss-up. I think we have work to do with the Muslim Arab American communities and communities of color in that state.
Wisconsin.
I think he ekes out Wisconsin. But Wisconsin, I would say, is the second hardest state after
Michigan.
Michigan, in terms of what we have to win.
Arizona and Nevada.
I think he wins Nevada. Nevada, the Democratic Party, is much stronger than people realize. It always looks like a close election. We turn out the votes. Arizona, I don't have enough of a feel for because I haven't been there enough. I think Ruben Gallego being on the ticket helps, but we have work to do there.
How prominently do you believe the issue of abortion will be? This will be the first presidential election conducted since the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe versus Wade.
Actually, that's a great point. Arizona, maybe I'm a little more bullish on after that decision. I mean, I think abortion rights is a huge, huge decision. We overperformed in 2022 because of that. I think it's particularly an issue in states like Arizona. In states like California, it was an issue, but we noticed that many people didn't mobilize in the same way because abortion rights have been protected. And that was the same in New York, and now that's thanks to Gretchen Whitmer and others, the same in Michigan. But in a state like Arizona, where you have going back to 1864, that could be the issue that swings that state. And so I do think it's a big issue in places like New Hampshire, North Carolina. I mean, I do think it's a major issue.
By the time September of this year rolls around, Congressman Khanna, will former President Trump be a convict?
I have no idea how the New York case is going to go. I think he's obviously violated the law on it. What the jury thinks is the appropriate penalty, I'll leave it for them to decide. But I don't think we should be banking on that as our silver bullet.
When you say we, you mean Democrats.
The Democrats. I mean, I know the polling shows that if he gets convicted, then he loses a lot of support. The polling has showed that in the past, and it hasn't proven to be true. So, you know, I wouldn't count on that as a silver bullet, whether it happens or not.
What is your degree of confidence the Supreme Court will nullify, that means reject, former President Trump's sweeping assertion of absolute immunity for a president of the United States?
I think they'll reject it, but they've already done him a big favor by just taking the case and delaying the case on insurrection. And so
Why has that been a benefit to the former president?
Well, I think the most serious case for the president wasn't on the hush money. I mean, I don't condone it, but, you know, what he did was a major violation of campaign law, but nowhere near the magnitude of instigating an insurrection in January 6th. And had that case taken place in D.C. and had he been convicted of insurrection, I don't doubt that his numbers would have really fallen. The New York case, I'm just less sure of the political impact. And what the Supreme Court did by taking this case is more or less ensured that D.C. case will not be heard in time for the election.
And just to be clear, Jack Smith did not charge the former president with insurrection.
Correct.
There are other charges related to what happened on January 6th. Many others have described it as an insurrection.
That's not
the charge.
Fair enough. Yes, I mean he's...
But by
conspiracy.
The Supreme Court having oral arguments, not taking on board the three-judge panel on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, who wrote a very lengthy judgment on this, which I think was tailor-made for the court to look at, read all the precedent, read all the history, read all the law, and say, you know, that's where we're going to come down anyway. By not doing that, the Supreme Court has informally given the former president room. Is that your vantage point?
He's giving him room to delay. And I don't think even Roberts, and I'm not a fan of this court for multiple reasons we could go into, including getting rid of Roe, but I don't think they would go so far as to rule that a president is totally immune from prosecution. I mean, and so but I don't think they get there until much closer to the election, and by then it's too late to make the whole case.
Do you believe there's a state that President Biden and Vice President Harris lost in 2020 that can be won in 2024?
North Carolina, especially given the gubernatorial candidate there is very extreme, similar to the gubernatorial candidate who Josh Shapiro beat by 10, 15 points.
I mean, in Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania. Shapiro won Pennsylvania. Yeah. And North Carolina, I think you have a person way to the right of Trump on some of these social issues, racial issues. So I think North Carolina and abortion is a good state for us. You know, Florida is always tough, but again, abortion is a big issue there on the ballot.
Six-week ban.
Yeah, six-week ban. I mean, we can be competitive there. And then the advantage the president's going to have is a financial and organizational advantage. He's going to be able to compete in a Florida, in an Ohio, in a North Carolina, and Georgia, and Arizona, and the Midwest. Trump is going to have to make choices that this president fortunately won't have to make. So we just need one or two of those states to break our way.
What about Texas?
Look, Texas, I think we should compete, but it's always the always the holy grail that we think we've become this permanent majority and it slips away. You know, maybe if Beto O'Rourke were running, he would put it in play. But
I think we have ample evidence on the no side of that ledger.
Well, he came close.
He came close. All right, Ro Khanna, been a pleasure. Thanks so much. Stay tuned for your takeout, outtake, and special, folks. See you next week. Welcome to your Takeout Outtake Especial. We are at Carmine's, thoroughly enjoying our time here. Ro Khanna is our special guest. He's been on the show before, so he's answered the three threshold questions. Go back to the archives, get the answers there. So I want to ask you, spend 3 minutes talking about this, because I think this is a fascinating insight into your experience in politics. Who is Derek Longo?
Derek Longo is my social studies teacher. Boy, you really read the article.
From high school.
From high school. He came into
Bucks
my
County,
class.
Pennsylvania.
Bucks County, Pennsylvania, Council Rock. He would come into class dressed as Theodore Roosevelt, and he would do things like have the students discuss what it's like negotiating at the Treaty of Versailles. He gave me my love of American history.
He was a great teacher, in other words.
Incredible teacher. One of my best teachers. And I count my time at Chicago and fancy law schools, he was one of my best teachers. And, you know, he had suffered a terrible, terrible tragedy. His daughter, who was pregnant, was hit by a bus driver, killed. His son was severely injured, fortunately recovered. The bus driver had been on drugs. And ever since I learned of that, I've invited him every year to come to the Capitol. He hasn't felt like it. I still hope if he listens to this, he'll take me up on it. But I recently went back to Bucks County and found out at the prodding of one of the journalists as he was praising me, he said, "Well, would you vote for Roe if he were running for Congress in your district?" And Longo has this pained expression. "Well, I have so much respect for him. I like him, but. And then he talks about how he's been a Trump supporter 2 times in a row. And the lesson to me about that was, we should not stereotype who these Trump voters are. I mean, here's a teacher who I have tremendous respect for, still do, who's voting for
learned,
Trump.
Learned, someone who believes in education, someone who believes in all the sort of verities of small-L liberalism.
Absolutely, who went above and beyond in the classroom, who was passionate, who obviously I was shocked when he told me he was a Trump voter because I didn't have any idea of his ideology growing up or in the classroom. And he said it was, and it's too much of one of the things the Atlantic doesn't get into because it makes it seem like, oh, he's voting for Trump just because he lost his daughter and on crime.
Right.
And it was much more complex. I mean, the writer did a great job, Russell Berman, but he couldn't cover the whole
right.
conversation. But Longo talks about some of the policies that he still agrees with Trump on entrepreneurship, economics, and even though he doesn't like some of the personality and what it would take to win back his trust. And it's less about the specifics of Derek Longo, but it's more about how do we start to have a conversation with people in this country with a respect where you can disagree but not demonize each other, not think that somehow you're morally superior to the other person, have some sense of common American identity. And to suspend this immediate judgment of our own conviction in the truth of our views. And that, to me, is what this country needs to move forward.
That sounds like you're talking to some of your fellow Democrats when you say those words.
Well, I'm talking to both Democrats and Republicans, and I'm not being preachy in this. I'm sure I've been guilty of hurling insults and myself. But it just seems to me, Gary, that we're going to have one of the ugliest elections in my lifetime. And what I hear across this country is, how are we going to have healing? How are we going to have reconciliation? After these two people who run for president are both around 80 years old and don't represent the future of the country, neither of them do, I mean, who's going to pick up the pieces? Who's going to rebuild this country? How are we going to come together? Are we going to perpetually be in a state where every Republican tries to inch out in the red states and Democrats in the blue states? Or is there any hope of having a common purpose again? And that is the task of my generation in Congress. There are good people on both sides, like Mike Gallagher, and I can name others on Democratic. But what are we going to do to build this country up post-Trump or Biden?
That's the voice of Ro Khanna. That's your Takeout Outtake Especial. Our thanks to Carmine's. We'll get to our food now. We'll see you next week.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari, Jamie Benson, Sarah Cook, Ellie Watson, Jake Rosen, and Ashley Armstrong. CBSN production by Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, go to takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News.
If you like The Takeout, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I'm CBS News correspondent Major Garrett, host of the podcast Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen. During the Cold War, FBI agent Robert Hansen traded classified secrets to the Kremlin in exchange for cash and jewels. In the podcast, you'll hear from Hansen's closest friends, family members, victims, and colleagues for the most comprehensive telling of who Robert Hansen really was. Binge the entire series now. Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen is available on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.